is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up, a sunny morning. Dick Donahue with you here on KGMI. As always, thank you for being with us. Let's start out with our weekly commentary again today, and we're going to talk a little bit about why elections matter. You know, many, us included, see parallels between today's big issues and those of the 60s and 70s. Mistakes in both geopolitical and fiscal policies compound over time, often leading to more mistakes. After Vietnam ended badly, U.S. weakness likely encouraged terrorism. The 1972 Munich massacre of Israel Olympic athletes, Antanabe in 1976, and finally the U.S. hostages held in Iran from 1979 to 1981. At the same time, both fiscal and monetary policy became unhinged. The result was stagflation, with inflation hitting and unemployment approaching double digits. We don't have room for a complete historical explanation, but Presidents Johnson, Nixon, Ford, and Carter each made mistakes in either foreign or fiscal policy that led to these problems. Then Ronald Reagan was elected, and while his opponents claimed he would cause nuclear war, the exact opposite happened. Stagflation was ended, the Berlin Wall fell, and the world entered a mostly peaceful era. So elections do matter. And with Iran attacking Israel last weekend, and now Israel retaliating, at least kind of, and with unsustainable budget deficits eroding the U.S. fiscal situation, we are reminded of the 1970s. In fact, there were two decisions made under President Carter almost 50 years ago that have helped cause both of these issues. We focus on policy, not personality. We are not attacking President Carter himself. He appears to be a very good and decent man. His great charitable work after leaving the presidency speaks for itself and sets a great standard for other former office holders. In addition, President Carter bucked his party and deregulated both the trucking and the airline industries. However, Carter also made some serious blunders. On the geopolitical front, it was Carter who decided, one, not to back the Shah of Iran in 1978, and after that, two, not to pursue regime change in Iran after the seizure of the American hostages and a coup d'etat against the duly elected Iranian President Banisadr, who had to flee for his life back to France. Now, the Islamic Republic of Iran effectively controls Syria, much of Iraq, Lebanon, Gaza, and some of Yemen, and in the meantime is aligning with rivals of the U.S., such as China and Russia. And with every passing decade, it has become more difficult to dislodge the regime of Iran, and now in the balance of a change in the near future, it may only be a matter of time before Iran is able to acquire a nuclear weapon. On the fiscal side, President Carter also championed an arcane but incredibly important change to Social Security enacted in 1977. This change virtually guaranteed the long-term insolvency of the old age pension portion of the Social Security system unless future policymakers agree to some combination of tax hikes and benefit cuts. But before these changes were made, Social Security payments were adjusted by inflation, what we call the cost of living adjustment, or COLA. Until the mid-1970s, Congress had to vote to make this adjustment, and politicians took credit every time they did. But as inflation became more of a problem, the annual COLA was tied directly to the Consumer Price Index. The COLA adjustment automatically increased both current and future benefits, but Carter added a wrinkle. Current recipients receive the COLA adjustment, but future benefits would rise by both the COLA plus an estimate of real wage gains. At first, this made little difference, but through the magic of compounding, this adjustment for real wages adds up, and the current trajectory of payments is unsustainable. Carter and other policymakers were warned about this problem at the time, but they didn't pay it heed. No wonder people see similarities today in the 1970s. Current policies and past policies are colliding to create the very same problems. As November approaches, voters would do well to remember this history. Their decisions are not just about the next few years, but they will resonate for decades to come. Solid U.S. leadership can change the entire world. And right now, that world needs some help. There's no doubt about it. While we're talking about that, let's go ahead and take a look at our global wrap-up for the week. And we saw that China's first quarter GDP was strong, but there are other indicators that point to weakness. But prior to that, global equities were lower on the week. That was amid heightened geopolitical tensions. The yield on the U.S. 10-year note rose 12 basis points to 4.63% from a week ago, while the price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude oil fell from $85.45 last Friday to $83.08. But volatility as measured by the CBOE Volatility Index, or VIX, also rose to 18.7 from 17.3 a week ago. And taking a look at some of the China issues we just mentioned, China's economic growth is beating expectations, but there are signs that weakness remain. China's economy grew at 5.3% in the first quarter. That was beating expectations. The strong growth was primarily contained in the first 2 months. However, while in line with the government's 5% target, several other indicators point to concerns about future economic activity. Factory output in March grew at 4.5% year over year. That compared to 7% the prior month, while retail sales rose 3.1% versus 5.5% in February. The property sector remains a major headwind with sustained operational difficulties, liquidity pressures, and low consumer confidence. Property investment fell 9.5% year over year, and new home prices fell at their fastest pace in 8 years to 2.2% year over year. The Hang Seng Mainland Property Index slumped 19% year to date. That's 50% from a year ago. And the property crisis, combined with rising government local debt and weakening consumer spending, it poses a challenge for economic momentum. So despite growing signs of weakness, the People's Bank of China has decided to hold rates steady at 2.5% amid concerns over currency stability. And we're seeing these Mideast tensions that are being elevated. And then in a move against Israel for the airstrike on its Damascus consulate last week, Iran launched drones and missiles towards Israel on Saturday. That's the first time that Iran has directly attacked Israel from its own territory. And the majority of the missiles were intercepted by Israeli, American, and other allied forces, minimizing damage. But over the years, Iran has built out diplomatic ties with American rivals and enhanced its military capabilities. The attack marks a strategic shift ending the shadow war with Iran and Israel have been engaged in for decades. In response, the U.S. announced sanctions against Iran's steel and drone companies. Additionally, Israeli retaliated Thursday night with a strike in central Iran, where nuclear facilities and an air base were located. The impact of that attack is still unclear. The strike appears to have been limited with minimal damage. Oil prices have fallen more than 3% this week, and heightened geopolitical risks in Israel prompted the S&P Global Ratings to lower Israel's long-term foreign and local currency sovereign credit rating from AA- to A+. We're also seeing that inflation is on the right track across several regions in the world. Canada's prices ticked up slightly in March to 2.9% from a year earlier due to higher gasoline prices, but they've steadily been slowing. The Bank of Canada expects inflation to subside to its 2% target next year, and it's slated to cut rates in June. The European Central Bank is also expected to cut rates in June as prices further slow to 2.4% year over year. Similarly, the United Kingdom's inflation print came in at a slower pace of 3.2% year over year. The probability of the Bank of England will cut rates in the summer increases. Labor markets cooled, with unemployment rising to 4.2% and wages slowed to 6% in March. Meanwhile, Japan's core inflation, which excludes fresh food and energy, and is the bank's and Japan's key measure, fell to 2.9%, but that remains above its 2% target. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back in a moment.
Hey, it's Les Schwab Tires. Right now, save up to $80 instantly, plus $50 with financing for a total of $130 off a set of four select tires. Our spring tire sale is a gift to say congrats, you made it through winter. Now you can swap out those winter tires for a fresher set at a lower price. Book an appointment online today. Les Schwab Tires, ranked number one by Forbes for customer service and auto repair and maintenance. Limited time offer while supplies last. Terms and conditions apply. See leschwab.com/sale for details.
Business owners, you have job openings? We have HireMeWa.com. HireMeWa.com is Cascade Radio Group's hyper-local job board. It's free and easy to use. Upload your available job listings today. Job seekers can post resumes, too. HireMeWa.com is available 24 hours a day. Check back frequently. New job listings added regularly. HireMeWa.com. Business owners, post your job openings for free right now at HireMeWa.com. That's HireMeWa.com. HireMeWa.com is a service of Cascade Radio Group and this station.
Today's world is hectic, and sometimes as parents, we need a little help. And we get it. Our kids prefer to hang out with their digital babysitter, where social media is their best friend. Companies like TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube promise entertainment and connection, but spread isolation and despair. To them, our kids are just dollar signs. For hours a day, social media sells our children's minds to the highest bidder, no matter the human cost. We would never let a real-life babysitter introduce our kids to racists, conspiracy theorists, or women haters. We wouldn't let a babysitter show our children violence or give them drugs. But social media companies do this every day, making billions of dollars by feeding our kids content that damages their mental health and self-esteem. So before we hand our kids off to the digital babysitter, just remember that social media is addictive and profitable by design. These companies don't care and Congress won't act. So it's up to us. We at the Center for Countering Digital Hate are fighting for change to make sure someone holds these companies accountable. Join us at protectingkidsonline.org.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wolf Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. We're Asset Advisors. We are located out on the Pacific Highway in the Pacific Commerce Center. That's out next to Wilson's Furnitures. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Okay, continuing on with our global roundup here, we've got some quick hits. The International Monetary Fund reversed its global growth expectations upwards from 2.9% to 3.2%. That is primarily driven by a stronger than expected U.S. economy. And existing home sales in the U.S. fell 4.3% month over month in March as mortgage rates surged to 7.1%. New residential construction plummeted 14.7% from a month ago. That's the largest drop since April of 2020. And meanwhile, Canada's existing home sales were steady, rising 0.5% month over month, but housing starts fell 7%. And U.S. President Joe Biden proposed new tariffs on China this week in a move to increase production and employment in the steel sector within the U.S. If implemented, the United States will increase levies from 7.5% to 25% on certain Chinese and aluminum products. But following the announcement, China implemented a levy of 43.5% on U.S. imports of propionic acid, which is a widely used chemical for animal feed to prevent mold, pesticides, herbicides, and drug development. And in its annual budget plan, Canada also reviewed plans to raise capital gains rates from 50% to 67% on corporations and wealthy individuals, which is estimated to generate around $19 billion over the next 5 years. The additional revenue is slated to fund measures to increase housing supply, improve health care, and feed school children. And Japan has seen an increased demand for autos and semiconductors, boosting exports by 7.3% year over year. That's marking four consecutive months of growth. Shipments to China and the U.S. were the main drivers, rising 12.6% to China and 8.5% to the United States, respectively. And Australia's unemployment rate rose slightly to 3.8% in March. That's a sign that the labor market remains tight. Economists predict that the Reserve Bank of Australia will be one of the last major central banks to cut interest rates as inflation remains sticky. And prices in New Zealand rose 4% from a year ago. That's the smallest increase in almost 3 years. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand indicated that they will keep interest rates steady until they see inflation further subside towards their 1% to 3% target. And in earnings news, with just over 14% of the constituents of the S&P 500 index having reported for the first quarter of 2024, blended earnings per share, which combines reported data with estimates of those that have yet to report, shows that earnings slightly rose around 0.2% compared with the same quarter a year ago. That is according to data from FactSet. Sales growth was up 3.6% year over year. Okay, let's take a little deeper look at some of these economic reports that came out this week, and we'll start out with March's retail sales. Retail sales beat expectations in March. They were rising 0.7% for the month versus a consensus expected gain of 0.4%, while previous months were revised higher. Factoring these in, retail sales grew an even faster 1.3%. These figures add to a trove of recent reports pulling the Federal Reserve away from rate cuts starting in June. Sales rose in 8 of 13 major categories for the month, led by a robust 2.7% gain in non-store retailers, think of internet and mail order sales, followed by a 2.1% increase at gas stations, which rose largely due to higher gas prices in March. The largest decline in March was a 0.7% drop for autos. Core sales, which exclude vehicle categories such as autos, building materials, and gas stations, and is a crucial measure for estimating GDP, surged 1% in March. It's up 1.4%, including revisions to prior months. After looking weak in the first 2 months of 2024, these sales end up increasing by 2.2% annual rate in the first quarter versus the fourth quarter of last year. It's important to remember that a key driver of overall spending is inflation. And while overall retail sales are up 4% in the last year and sit at a record high unadjusted for inflation, real inflation-adjusted retail sales are up just 0.5% in the last year and have remained stagnant for nearly 2 years after peaking in April of 22. It has been 40 years since the U.S. had an inflation problem, so investors should be aware that it can distort data. Our view remains that the tightening in monetary policy since 2022 will eventually deliver a recession. In other news, the Empire State Index, which is a measure of New York factory sentiment, rose to -14.3 in April from -20.9 in March. And as I mentioned earlier, the housing report also came out this week, and housing starts posted the largest monthly decline in March since the worst of the COVID pandemic, coming in well short of all consensus expectations. However, this follows a surge in starts in February, and we do not see March as a sign of persistent weakness ahead of home building. While the data have been very choppy since the Federal Reserve began current tightening cycle 2 years ago, it looks like construction activity has bottomed. Even in the large drop in March, starts are still above the level that they were last August. So keep in mind that many owners of existing homes are hesitant to list their homes and give up that fixed sub 3% minus mortgage rates. So many prospective buyers have turned to a new build as their best option. This has boosted demand for developers and should help construction activity going forward. The problem is that with recent inflation reports having some in hotter than expected, the markets and the Fed itself seem increasingly doubtful about near-term rate cuts. So as a result, long-term interest rates have gone up, including mortgage rates. In turn, this could generate a temporary headwind for home sales and housing starts in April. Looking at the details of this report, the slowdown in construction in March was broad-based, with 3 out of 4 major regions and both single-family and multi-unit starts contributing. Housing permits and completions also took a breather in March, dropping 4.3% and 13.5% respectively. Another recent theme is the split between single-family and multi-family development. Over the last year, the number of single-family starts is up 21.2%, while the number of multi-unit starts are down 44.3%. Permits for single-family homes are up 17.4%. Multi-unit permits are down 20.2%. This huge gap in data is due to the unprecedented nature of the last 4 years since COVID began. And while we don't see housing as a major driver of economic growth in the near term, we don't expect the housing bust like the 2000s that's on its way either. Builders built too few homes in the decade before COVID, and that shortage should support home prices in the years ahead. In other housing news, the NAHB Housing Index, which is a measure of home builder sentiment, remained at 51 in April. This marks the second month in a row that the index is above 50 since last summer. It's signaling that greater number of builders view conditions as good versus poor. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back shortly.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
Every day, KGMI brings you the latest news and information, and we also give you a chance to express your opinion on a major news story of the day.
Go to MyBellinghamNow.com anytime and take part in our daily news poll to see what others are thinking and add your voice.
We'll have an update during the KGMI afternoon news, and we'll give you a final tally and a new question each day during the KGMI morning news.
Be part of the conversation with the KGMI Daily News Poll, another informative and free feature from KGMI and MyBellinghamNow.com.
Are you over 30 and putting off life insurance? It's time to get a quick quote from Ethos, a better, easier way to get term life insurance, all online with no medical exam. Answer a few health questions and you could be approved for up to $2 million. Isn't it worth 10 minutes to help protect your family's financial security? Ethos, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as $1 a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at checkethos.com. That's checkethos.com.
Learn more at She Can STEM. A message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Deanna Haraluk with KGMI's all-new Pet Pulse. I'm a pet parent myself, and we all want the best for our critters, whether they're furry, feathered, hooved, or otherwise. The segment is brought to you by Whatcom Veterinary Hospital. Heartworms, fleas, and ticks are more prevalent in the spring and summer. It's recommended to get monthly preventative treatments for your pet. Contact Whatcom Veterinary Hospital for a wellness exam today. And tune in to KGMI's Pet Pulse Wednesdays during the morning news at 6:20 and 7:50, and during the afternoon news at 5:20, right here on KGMI.
KGMI wants to put a grand in your hand. You could be one word away from a chance to win $1,000.
That's right. Just listen each weekday to KGMI for the keyword during the 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. hours.
Then go to the Grand in Your Hand contest page at mybellinghamnow.com before midnight and enter each keyword for your chance to win $1,000.
We'll have 4 keywords each weekday so you can increase your chances of winning by entering all 4. Every day we play the contest.
You already listen to KGMI for the latest local news and discussion of the latest issues. Now you can win $1,000 while you do it.
A Grand in Your Hand is brought to you on KGMI by Niederhouse of Luxury, Whatcom County's newest fine jewelry store, next to Lombardi's on Bellwether Way.
A Grand in Your Hand is back on KGMI.
Get details at mybellinghamnow.com.
There's a lot going on right now, and broadcasters are on the ground covering all of it, bringing you the weather, the traffic, and breaking news, all while entertaining you 24 hours a day. Someone needs to tell you what's going on around the world and in our hometowns, and that someone is us. We are free radio. We are always there. We are broadcasters. Visit wearebroadcasters.com or text radio to 52886 to learn more. Furnished by NAB and this station.
I thought mixing bleach with my floor cleaner would take the stain out.
When my youngest ate the dog's medicine, that was a new one.
I was trying to protect my garden, but I accidentally sprayed myself with pesticide.
So I called 1-800-222-1222, the poison helpline.
A poison expert helped me figure out what to do next.
I was connected to someone who spoke Spanish.
They answered my questions.
It was free.
It was confidential.
It was real help in real time.
Keep the poison experts in your pocket. 1-800-222-1222.
KGMI connects with Joe Tian.
I grow a lot of vegetables, and I've tried numerous ways to control aphids. The only thing that I've found that works is a systemic treatment.
Okay.
And every fiber of that plant is treated.
Join us each weekday at 4 p.m. for KGMI Connects.
I don't think that racism is in every fiber of our society.
On KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and MyBellinghamNow.com. The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Harness the power of the sun, reduce your carbon footprint, and save on your energy bills. Explore the advantages of going solar with West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. Thanks for listening. Going to go on with our economic reports. We're going to have the March existing home sales report that also came out this week. And existing home sales took a widely expected breather in March, following the largest monthly gain in a year in February. And while sales activity has finally bottomed, it looks like significant recovery is still facing headwinds from mortgage rates that remain above 7%. Mortgage rates have been dropping in early 24, but that trend has recently reversed, and the culprit is a recent string of bad inflation reports that have cast doubts on the Federal Reserve's following through with rate cuts this year. Meanwhile, home prices appear to be rising again, although modestly, with the median price of an existing home up 4.8% from a year ago. The result is that the affordability is still a big concern for buyers. Assuming a 20% down payment, the rise in mortgage rates since Federal Reserve began its current tightening cycle in March of 22 amounts to 34% increase in monthly payments on a new 30-year mortgage for the median existing home. Eventually, the housing market can adapt to these increases, but continued volatility in financing costs will cause some indigestion. The other major headwind for sales has been many existing homeowners are reluctant to sell due to a mortgage lock-in phenomenon after buying or refinancing at much lower rates before 2022. This continues to limit future existing sales and inventories. However, there are signs of progress with inventories rising 14.4% in the last year. That said, the month's supply of homes, which is how long it would take to sell existing inventory at the current very slow sales pace, was 3.2 in March. That's well below the benchmark of 5 that the National Association of Realtors used to denote normal market. A tight inventory of existing homes means that while the pace of sales looks like 2008, we aren't seeing that translate into a big decline in prices. So putting this together, we expect a modest recovery in sales in 2024. In another news, initial claims for jobless benefits remained unchanged last week at 212,000, while continuing claims rose by 2,000 to 1.812 million. The figures are consistent with continued job gains in April. Finally, on the manufacturing front, the Philadelphia Fed Index, which is a measure of factory sentiment in that region, jumped to plus 15.5 in April from plus 3.2 in March. Let's also take a look at the March Industrial Production and Capacity Utilization Report. And industrial production continued to rebound in March, rising for a second month due to broad-based gains. The manufacturing sector is the main source of strength in this report, with activity rising 0.5%. Auto production jumped 3.1% in March and has been a big driver of activity so far in 2024. This measures up at a 10.1% annual released rate in the last 3 months. That's likely the result of production getting back on track following large-scale strikes late last year. Meanwhile, non-auto manufacturing, which we think is a core version of industrial production, posted a moderate gain of 0.3% in March. The production of high-tech equipment also rose in March, is up 14.1% in the last year. That's the strongest growth of any major category. This likely reflects investment in AI as well as the reshoring of semiconductor production. But notably, activity here has begun to slow, recently signaling that the initial boost due to the CHIPS Act may finally be wearing off. The utility sector, which is volatile and largely dependent on weather, has also been a tailwind in the report, rising 2.1% in March. And finally, the one source of weakness in March that came from mining sector, with activity falling 1.4%. Broad-based declines in oil and other mineral extraction more than offset a small increase in natural gas production. However, given the recent jump in energy prices, we do expect a rebound in mining in the next couple of months. You know, I've talked about this one before, but I'm going to spend some time talking a little bit about it again. And basically, it's what we call a retiree's guide to qualified charitable distributions. You know, navigating the world of financial planning can feel like learning a new language. There's acronyms like RMD and RIA and IRA and DIF filling the air. However, amid this alphabet soup, there's one abbreviation that retirees shouldn't overlook, and that's called QCD, which is short for Qualified Charitable Distribution. So what makes QCD so helpful? Well, QCDs allow a donor to distribute funds from their IRA tax-free. They can satisfy all or a portion of the account's required minimum distribution amount, or RMD. QCDs can be a particularly effective tool for those retirees who are charitably inclined and do not need their RMDs for living expenses. There are some very important steps to take, though, to ensure that it's done correctly. And you can unintentionally forfeit the entire tax-free distribution if these specific rules are not followed. So let's explore this a little closer. Number one, you need to confirm your eligibility. You need to ensure that your QCD is done correctly and to review the QC eligibility requirements. Basically, the first one is that the account holder must be at least 70.5 years old or older in the year of the distribution. For example, if you turn 70.5 in December 31, then you're eligible for a QCD that calendar year. However, you need to note that the RMD age occurs later than the QCD eligibility age, and so the RMD age might be 73 right now, but QCDs start when you're 70.5. So you're technically able to perform a QCD before you have your required minimum distributions. Second, the account must be an eligible account type. Traditional IRAs, rollover IRAs, and inherited or beneficiary IRAs are all eligible, and simple and SEP IRAs as well under certain conditions. Notably, this means employer accounts such as 401ks or 403bs are not eligible for QCDs. Third, the donation must be received by a qualified charity. Most 501(c)(3) organizations will satisfy this requirement. But foundations and donor advised funds, or what we call DAFs, are not eligible to receive a QCD. Lastly, there's a maximum amount of QCD. That limit is limited to $100,000. This won't affect most donors, but it's an important consideration. Additionally, the QCD is not an itemized deduction. Because the distribution is not treated as an income, an additional deduction is not allowed. So when you give this money, you're not going to take an itemized deduction for it. So let's talk about processing the distribution. Once you've determined whether you qualify for QCD, the next step is to process that distribution. You need to work directly with the custodian of your IRA to have it processed. They typically have a standard form for you to complete. In most cases, you're going to need the name and the address of the charity, and they're going to pay this money directly from your account, directly to the charity, not to you. If the check is made out to you, then it'll be considered a taxable distribution to you. The check will then be mailed directly to the charity. So they make it out to the charity and they mail it directly to the charity. They also ensure that you're not withholding any income taxes on the distribution, since this is a tax-free distribution. And once the check is mailed, you want to confirm that the charity that it was received. You also verify this once the check clears, i.e. is cashed within the custodian. And lastly, you want to receive a contribution statement from the charitable organizations that you donated to, just as you would with a normal cash distribution. You're not finished yet, though. The most critical and often overlooked step in the whole process, you must document that the distribution was not a taxable distribution. Doesn't the custodian just document that it was a QCD, you ask? Well, no. The custodian puts the responsibility on the account owner to document that the distribution was, in fact, a QCD. So if you fail to remember to do this, everything is for naught. The distribution will be considered taxable. But here's how to prevent it. First, have your CPA or tax preparer make sure that they know that the QCD was processed. The year-end 1099 will be indicated as much. Now, we happen to provide a list to our clients of all the QCD donations we make for them on their behalf during the year. But if you prepare your own taxes, you'll need to document this on line 4A and 4B of the 1040. On line 4A, you're going to write the total distribution amount. Then on 1040B, you're going to write the amount that is taxable and write QCD behind it. I'll give you an example. Let's say that you distribute $40,000 from your IRA. If your distribution is $40,000, that's your RMD for the year. But $20,000 of this is a QCD. On line 4A, you're going to enter in $40,000. Then you're going to put $20,000 on line 4B. And then behind that $20,000, you're going to write the letters QCD. And don't miss out on the reason you're doing a QCD. Ensure that it is captured correctly on your return. We need a quick break here. We're going to come back and finish talking about this after we get off this break. Thanks for listening.
Have you really sat down and taken a good look at how much you're paying for home and auto insurance? I'm Derek Barnes, and by now you might know that my wife Denise and I own D&D Insurance in Ferndale. Over the years, we've seen individuals paying $300, $400, and sometimes $500 a year too much for their home and auto insurance. If we're going to be good stewards of the money provided to us, I think it's prudent we review our insurance and financial needs. Likewise, we've been given families to take care of. And if something untimely were to happen to us, it's good to know that we can still provide for our families even when we're not around. Life insurance gives us that opportunity. Don't put it off for another day. Pick up the phone and start making some wise choices. Call the agents at D&D Insurance. They'll point you in the right direction. 392-8159 or visit us online at dndinsurance.com. We look forward to meeting you.
Whatcom County and Northwest Washington offer endless beauty, and our phones make it possible for us to capture it instantly.
And now KGMI is giving you another way to share your incredible pictures with Whatcom Wanderings.
Just go to KGMI.com, look for Whatcom Wanderings, post your photos, and tell us where you took them.
So share your pictures of our area's incredible beauty and complexity with Whatcom Wanderings at KGMI.com.
With more ways than ever to connect to news and entertainment, 90% of new car buyers want the tried and true AM/FM radio option.
Gadgets are great, but when you're behind the wheel, you just want that local connection that you can't get from online apps.
Local radio is dependable and free, with no subscription or cellular data required, and no fumbling with a separate device.
Visit wearebroadcasters.com and tell us how you depend on AM radio stations like KGMI, and how you want AM included in your next new car.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Okay, welcome back to Woke Wake Up this Sunday morning. Dick Donahue with you here on KGMI. Again, if you got questions for me, you can give me a call, 360-733-1200. Again, check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. I'm going to finish the discussion I started in the last segment talking about doing qualified charitable donations out of your IRA. A few of the bullet points that I mentioned, number one, you can't do them until you turn 70 and a half. So you become eligible to do qualified charitable donations in the year that you do 70 and a half. Once you get to that point and you've done that, reporting it on your tax return correctly is really, really important. As I mentioned a minute ago, you'll do this on line 4A and 4B of your 1040 report. And basically, 4A is going to show that you took a distribution. In this case, we used a number of $40,000. But if you made a QCD donation of $20,000, you're going to show the taxable amount on line 4B, which would be $40,000 minus $20,000. So the taxable amount is $20,000. And behind that, you're going to write the letters QCD so that the IRS knows that you made that donation. It is important that you get documentation also from your charities for these donations. But you need to consider QCDs when you're evaluating also Roth conversions. You don't want to wait till 70 and a half to plan for your QCDs. If you're charitably inclined, you have an IRA or a current pre-tax 401k balance, you need to start planning for your QCDs before that. But how do you do that? Well, one important consideration is partial Roth conversions in retirement, typically prior to the time that you start receiving Social Security. If you're considering converting an IRA into a Roth, know that a significant portion of this is going to be given away via QCDs, then you want to make sure that you leave a balance in that IRA so that you can do that. That means you want to reduce the amount that is converted. In other words, you're only going to convert the amount that you aren't going to give away using QCDs later. But why? Well, partial Roth conversion takes some of your pre-tax IRA and converts it to a Roth. Counting the conversion amount is ordinary income. But if you are going to give some of your IRA away as a QCD, then that portion will never be taxed. In short, you could be paying tax on something that wasn't going to be taxed. And so it's important for you to do some planning ahead of time and take a look at what you're charitably inclined, what you might want to do, because this is subject to income tax on the correct amount that is not converted. Just remember to plan accordingly when considering partial Roth conversions in light of future potential QCDs. So in conclusion, QCDs are a great tool to keep in your retirement tax savings toolkit. You can satisfy your RMD, you can avoid income tax, donate to your favorite charities, all in one exercise. However, it must be done correctly. You need to make sure you communicate your QCD to your tax preparer. And if you prepare your own taxes, make sure that you complete the 1040 correctly. And don't forfeit the entire exercise by failing to report it correctly. Now, we process close to 100 families in our office that we do QCDs on every year. So it's something that we do a ton of, and we've become very good at it. So it's one of those things where if you feel like you need some assistance or you got some questions, you can always give me a call, 360-733-1200. Well, let's also talk about five smart tips for dividend stock investing this year. And basically, dividend stocks have been performance laggards in the bull market. that is led by the Magnificent Seven stocks. Those are your big seven tech stocks. Despite uninspiring recent performance, dividend stocks can play an important portfolio role for investors seeking a combination of income and growth. Although it may seem intuitive to invest in the highest yielding stocks, focusing primarily on yield may not be the most effective investment strategy. Investors should consider the following five tips. Number one, the highest yielding sectors may not be the best investments. Consumer staples, energy, and utilities are among the highest yielding sectors within the S&P 500 index. However, all three of these sectors face growth challenges. At some of the companies in each sector trade at valuations that may be excessive relative to earnings growth prospects. Although dividend yield is an important factor, earnings and dividend growth potential are also important factors to consider when assessing the appropriate price to pay for a dividend stock. Number two, the margin of safety is often an overlooked factor. Some dividend yields are safer than others, as dividend payments may be suspended or reduced by companies facing financial stress. In some cases, dividend payouts are greater than current earnings or cash flows, creating a low margin of safety during times of economic or market stress. Cash flow is harder to manipulate and often less variable than earnings. Many investors look at the ratio of operating cash flow to dividends payments to assess whether dividend payout can be maintained under stress. The lower the ratio, the higher the margin of safety associated with the dividend. Investors should determine whether a dividend yield is sustainable or whether high yields may be a signal of financial stress. Number three, the time horizon matters. The longer the investment time horizon, the greater the importance of an equity growth to preserving purchasing power. Investors with long-term horizons should consider potential dividend growth as well as yield in exploring investment opportunities. Technology has historically been an underallocated sector by dividend investors, but could become an attractive destination as mature technology companies increasingly are distributing more of their substantial cash flow to investors in the forms of dividends and stock buybacks. Number four, diversification can also smooth the ride for dividend investors. Identifying dividend-paying opportunities outside of the highest-yielding sectors may be a prudent diversification strategy. Diversification may smooth the ride in volatile markets, which is an important consideration for long-term investors. Many dividend-oriented investors seek dividend yield through all sectors, finding the best opportunities in each sector while paying attention to valuations, margin of safety, and growth. And number five, dividend-oriented funds are not all the same. The distinction among dividend-paying stocks are relevant to investors picking individual stocks as well as those for investors investing in dividend-oriented exchange-traded funds. Some dividend-oriented ETFs are yield-focused. Others attempt to combine current dividend yield with dividend growth. Yield-focused dividend funds often have concentrations in such sectors as consumer staples, financial services, utilities, and energy. Dividend growth funds may be more diverse from a sector perspective, and investors should look under the hood to understand the types and sectors of stocks that emphasize before they invest in a dividend fund. And finally, dividend stocks have been unloved and amid enthusiasm about AI and excitement about the prospects for the Magnificent Seven and other AI beneficiaries. However, income-oriented stocks can play an important role for an investor portfolio. Given the meaningful differences that exist among dividend-paying stocks and dividend-oriented funds, investors who consider factors beyond yield are more likely to achieve their desired results. So something to think about here when we're going out there. Saw a piece here this week I want to share. A little bit of conversation that's going on with Trump advisors over whether or not to limit the SALT, that's a state and local tax write-off, to $10,000 or below. And we're seeing that some economists are advising Donald Trump. They're pushing him to keep a cap on state and local deductions, which limits the deduction of these taxes, when you're itemizing taxes, now 95% or thereabouts of tax return preparers do not itemize any longer. In many cases, this affects high tax states like New York, New Jersey, and California, but I think Washington would also fit in there with a combination of the relatively high property taxes based on valuations in the state, as well as state sales tax, and now the capital gains tax that it applies. But economists Stephen Moore and Arthur Laffer, they're regularly meeting with Trump and to pitch him on the economic policy ideas, and they have been staunchly opposed to any increase in that $10,000 write-off of state and local taxes or SALT. The limit was imposed in the 2017 tax law. It'll expire at the end of 2025, along with some other key portions of that law. And so basically, Laffer said on Wednesday that it makes no sense to subsidize New York State's high tax rates. And Moore said that the benefits are very, very rich people in very blue states. He said, I would never get rid of the up to $10,000 limit. So just to let you know, there's quite a bit of discussion going on right now about whether or not to change that limit. May not affect a lot of people because you got to be able to itemize in order to do it. But I know our property taxes have gone up a lot here in the state. I think you're going to find more and more people that might have more than $10,000. Of course, your sole deductions have to exceed the standard deduction amount, which would normally be included. Something to think about, something to be aware of. And we're going to get out of here, but thank you for listening. Have a great week. Don't forget our live show next Saturday at 11 o'clock. Take care.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.